Welcome, the Dweller of the Dark. We are a channel honoring the yellowed and blackened bones of many prominent authors. We will be digging up several obscure, strange, and forgotten authors who influenced many of the great horror, science fiction, and fantasy writers today. Comment below if you like. If you have authors that you'd like to see recognized, list them in the comments or contact our author page. Subscribe for more tales of the horrifying, obscure, strange, and forgotten. We'll have quite a collection climbing out of the tombs. If you like any of our tales, comment, ring the bell, and crush the like button below. Unknown Horror Masters, the Skull and Bones Collection has risen from the grave. More beast to be released soon. Find us on Fiverr to raise 7 kinds of hell. Check out our other stories and our websites. YouTube, BitChute, Rumble, Dweller of the Dark. Official website, dwellerofthedark.com. Kindle Vella, new serialized novels and novelette. Weekly new episodes. Check out links below for Where the Wolf Dwells. The Curious Death of Dionysus Shall Not. Our books and ebooks are on Kindle Amazon. Follow, support us on Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Bandcamp. Dweller of the Dark. Children of Horror, Legion of Ghouls. Tonight, we continue our celebration of Halloween. Each night, we will be presenting tales of the best Halloween horrors ever conjured to terrify, haunt, and delight. And remember, devilishly devoted to horror and Halloween. May your souls always be. The Cloak by Robert Bloch. The sun was dying, and its blood spattered the sky as it crept into a sepulchre behind the hills. The keening wind sent the dry, fallen leaves scurrying toward the west, as though hastening them to the funeral of the sun. "Nuts!" said Henderson to himself, and stopped thinking. The sun was setting in a dingy red sky, and a dirty, raw wind was kicking up the half-rotten leaves in a filthy gutter. Why should he waste time with cheap imagery? "Nuts!" said Henderson again. It was probably a mood evoked by the day, he mused. After all, this was the sunset of Halloween. Tonight was the dreaded All Hallows' Eve, when spirits walked and skulls cried out from their graves beneath the earth. Either that, or tonight was just another rotten cold fall day. Henderson sighed. There was a time, he reflected, when the coming of this night meant something. A dark Europe, groaning in superstitious fear, dedicated this eve to the grinning unknown. A million doors had once been barred against the evil visitants. A million prayers mumbled, a million candles lit. There was something majestic about the idea, Henderson reflected. Life had been an adventure in those times, and men walked in terror of what the next turn of a midnight road might bring. They had lived in a world of demons and ghouls and elementals who sought their souls, and by heaven, in those days, a man's soul meant something. This new skepticism had taken a profound meaning away from life. Men no longer revered their souls. "Nuts!" said Henderson again, quite automatically. There was something crude and 20th century about the coarse expression which always checked his introspective flights of fancy. The voice in his brain that said "nuts" took the place of humanity to Henderson. Common humanity, which would echo the same sentiment upon hearing his secret thoughts. So, now Henderson uttered the word and endeavored to forget problems and purple patches alike. He was walking down the street at sunset to buy a costume for the masquerade party tonight, and he had much better concentrate on finding the costumers before it closed than waste his time daydreaming about Halloween. His eyes searched the darkening shadows of the dingy buildings lining the narrow thoroughfare. Once again,
He peered at the address he had scribbled down after finding it in the phone book. Why the devil didn't they light up the shops when it got dark? He couldn't make out numbers. This was a poor, run-down neighborhood. But after all, abruptly, Henderson spied the place across the street and started over. He passed the window and glanced in. The last rays of the sun slanted over the top of the building across the way and fell directly on the window and its display. Henderson drew a sharp intake of breath. He was staring at a customer's window, not looking through a fissure into hell. Then why was it all red fire, lighting the grinning visages of fiends? Sunset, Henderson muttered aloud. Of course it was, and the faces were merely clever masks, such as would be displayed in this sort of place. Still, it gave the imaginative man a start. He opened the door and entered. The place was dark and still. There was a smell of loneliness in the air, the smell that haunts all places long undisturbed. Tombs and graves in deep woods and caverns in the earth and nuts. What the devil was wrong with him anyway? Henderson smiled apologetically at the empty darkness. This was the smell of the costumer's shop, and it carried him back to college days of amateur theatricals. Henderson had known this smell of mothballs, decayed furs, grease paint, and oils. He had played amateur Hamlet, and in his hands he had held a smirking skull that hid all knowledge in its empty eyes. A skull from the costumers. Well, here he was again, and the skull gave him the idea. After all, Halloween night it was. Certainly, in this mood of his, he didn't want to go as a Raja, or a Turk, or a pirate. They all did that. Why not go as a fiend, or a warlock, or a werewolf? He could see Lindstrom's face when he walked into the elegant penthouse wearing rags of some sort. The fellow would have a fit with his society crowd wearing their expensive Elsa Maxwell takeoffs. Henderson didn't greatly care for Lindstrom's sophisticated friends anyway. A gang of amateur Noel cowards and horsey women wearing harnesses of jewels. Why not carry out the spirit of Halloween and go as a monster? Henderson stood there in the dusk, waiting for someone to turn on the lights, come out from the back room, and serve him. After a minute or so, he grew impatient and rapped shortly on the counter. "Say in there, service!" Silence and a shuffling noise from the rear, then an unpleasant noise to hear in the gloom. There was a banging from the downstairs, and then the heavy clump of footsteps. Suddenly Henderson gasped. A black bulk was rising from the floor. It was, of course, only the opening of the trap door from the basement. A man shuffled behind the counter, carrying a lamp. In that light, his eyes blinked drowsily. The man's yellowish face crinkled into a smile.
"I was sleeping, I'm afraid,"
said the man softly.
"Can I serve you, sir?"
"I was looking for a Halloween costume."
"Oh, yes. And what was it you had in mind?"
The voice was weary, infinitely weary. The eyes continued to blink in the flabby yellow face. "Nothing unusual, I'm afraid. You see, I rather fancy some sort of monster get-up for a party. Don't suppose you carry anything in that line?"
"I could show you mask."
"No, I meant werewolf outfits. Something of the sort. More of the authentic."
"So, the authentic."
"Yes. Why this old dunce stress the word?"
"I might. Yes. I might have just the thing for you, sir."
The eyes blinked, but the thin mouth pursed in a smile.
just the thing for Halloween.
What's that?
Have you ever considered the possibility of being a vampire?
Like Dracula?
Ah, yes, I suppose. Dracula.
Not a bad idea. Do you think I'm the type for that, though? The man appraised him with that tight smile.
Vampires are of all types. I understand. You would do nicely.
Hardly a compliment, Henderson chuckled. But why not? What's the outfit?
Outfit? Merely evening clothes, or what you wear. I will furnish you with the authentic cloak.
Just a cloak? Is that all?
Just a cloak. But it is worn like a shroud. It is shroud cloth, you know. Wait, I'll get it for you.
The shuffling feet carried the man into the rear of the shop again. Down the trapdoor entrance he went, and Henderson waited. There was more banging, and presently the old man reappeared carrying the cloak. He was shaking dust from it in the darkness.
Here it is, the genuine cloak.
Genuine?
Allow me to adjust it for you. It will work wonders, I'm sure.
The cold, heavy cloth hung draped about Henderson's shoulders. The faint odor rose mustily in his nostrils as he stepped back and surveyed himself in the mirror. The lamp was poor, but Henderson saw that the cloak effected a striking transformation in his appearance. His long face seemed thinner. His eyes were accentuated in the facial pallor, heightened by the somber cloak he wore. It was a big, black shroud.
Genuine,
murmured the old man. He must have come up suddenly, for Henderson hadn't noticed him in the glass. I'll take it, Henderson said. How much?
You'll find it quite entertaining, I'm sure.
How much?
Shall we say $5?
Here. The old man took the money, blinking, and drew the cloak from Henderson's shoulders. When it slid away, he felt suddenly warm again. It must be cold in the basement. The cloth was icy. The old man wrapped the garment, smiling, and handed it over. I'll have it back tomorrow, Henderson promised.
No need. You purchased it. It is yours.
But
I am leaving business shortly. Keep it. You will find more use for it than I, surely.
But
a pleasant evening to you.
Henderson made his way to the door in confusion, then turned to salute the blinking old man in the dimness. Two eyes were burning at him from across the counter. Two eyes that did not blink. Good night, said Henderson, and closed the door quickly. He wondered if he were going just a trifle mad. At 8, Henderson nearly called up Lindstrom to tell him he couldn't make it. The cold chills came the minute he put on the damn cloak. And when he looked at himself in the mirror, his blurred eyes could scarcely make out the reflection. But after a few drinks, he felt better about it. He hadn't eaten, and the liquor warmed his blood. He paced the floor, attitudinizing with the cloak, sweeping it about him, and scowling in what he thought was a ferocious manner.
Damn it! He was going to be a vampire, all right!
He called a cab, went down to the lobby. The driver came in, and Henderson was waiting, black cloak furled.
I wish you to drive me,
he said in a low voice. The cabman took one look at him in the cloak and turned pale.
What's that?
I ordered you to come, said Henderson gutturally. While he quaked with inner mirth, he leered ferociously and swept the cloak back. Yeah, okay, driver almost ran outside. Henderson stalked after him. Where to, boss? I mean, sir. Frightened face didn't turn as Henderson intoned the address and sat back. The cab started with a lurch that set Henderson to chuckling deeply,
in character.
At the sound of the laughter, the driver got panicky and raced his engine up to the limit set by the governor. Henderson laughed loudly, and the impressionable driver fairly quivered in his seat. It was quite a ride, but Henderson was entirely unprepared to open the door and find it slammed after him as the cabman drove hastily away without collecting a fare. I must look the part, he thought complacently, as he took the elevator up to the penthouse apartment. There were three or four others in the elevator. Henderson had seen them before at other affairs Lindstrom had invited him to attend, but nobody seemed to recognize him. It rather pleased him to think how his wearing of an unfamiliar cloak and an unfamiliar scowl seemed to change his entire personality and appearance. Here the other guests had donned elaborate disguises. One woman wore the costume of a Watteau shepherdess. Another was attired as a Spanish ballerina. A tall man dressed as Pagliacci, and his companion had donned a Toreador outfit. Yet Henderson recognized them all, knew that their expensive habiliments were not truly disguises at all, but merely elaborations calculated to enhance their appearance. Most people at costume parties gave vent to their suppressed desires. The women showed off their figures. The men either accentuated their masculinity, as the Toreador did, or clowned it. Such things were pitiful. These conventional fools, eagerly doffing their dismissal business suits and rushing off to a lodge or amateur theatrical or masked ball in order to satisfy their starving imaginations. Why didn't they dress in garish colors on the street? Henderson often pondered the question. Surely, these society folk in the elevator were fine-looking men and women in their outfits, so healthy, so red-faced, and full of vitality. They had such robust throats and necks. Henderson looked at the plump arms of the woman next to him. He stared without realizing it for a long moment, and then he saw that the occupants of the car had drawn away from him. They were standing in the corner as though they feared his cloak and scowl, and his eyes fixed on the woman. Their chatter had ceased abruptly. The woman looked at him as though she were about to speak when the elevator doors opened and afforded Henderson a welcome respite. What the devil was wrong? First the cab driver, then the woman. Had he drunk too much? Well, no chance to consider that. Here was Marcus Lindstrom, and he was thrusting a glass into Henderson's hand. What have we here? A boogeyman. It needed no second glance to perceive that Lindstrom, as usual at such affairs, was already quite bottle dizzy. The fat host was positively swimming in alcohol. Have a drink, Henderson, my lad. I'll take mine from the bottom. That outfit of yours gave me a shock. Where'd you get the makeup? Makeup? I'm not wearing any makeup. Oh, sure you're not. How silly of me. Henderson wondered if he were crazy. Had Lindstrom really drawn back? Were his eyes actually filled with a certain dismay? Oh, the man was obviously intoxicated. I'll see you later, blabbed Lindstrom, edging away and quickly turning to the other arrivals. Henderson watched the back of Lindstrom's neck. It was fat and white. It bulged over the collar of his costume, and there was a vein in it, a vein in Lindstrom's fat neck. Frightened Lindstrom. Henderson stood alone in the anteroom. From the parlor beyond came the sound of music and laughter, party noises. Henderson hesitated before entering. He drank from the glass in his hand, Bacardi rum, and powerful. On top of his other drinks, it almost made the man reel, but he drank, wondering. What was wrong with him and his costume? Why did he frighten people? Was he unconsciously acting his vampire role? That crack of Lindstrom's about makeup now. Acting on impulse, Henderson stepped over to the long panel mirror in the hall. He lurched a little, then stood in the harsh light before it. He faced the glass, stared into the mirror, and saw nothing. He looked at himself in the mirror, and there was no one there. Henderson began to laugh softly, evilly, deep in his throat. As he gazed into the empty, unreflecting glass, his laughter rose in black glee. "I'm drunk," he whispered. "I must be drunk. Mirror in my apartment may be blurred. Now I'm so far gone, I can't see straight. Sure, I'm drunk. Been acting ridiculously, scaring people. Now I'm seeing hallucinations. Or not seeing them, rather. Visions? Angels?" His voice lowered. "Sure. Angels. Standing right in back of me now. Hello, angel." "Hello." Henderson whirled. There she stood in the dark cloak, her hair a shimmering halo above her white, proud face, her eyes celestial blue and her lips infernal red. "Are you real?" asked Henderson gently. "Or am I a fool to believe in miracles?" "This miracle's name is Sheila Darley, and it would like to powder its nose if you please. Kindly use this mirror through the courtesy of Stephen Henderson," replied the cloaked man with a grin. He stepped back a ways, eyes intent. The girl turned her head and favored him with a slow, impish smile. "Haven't you seen powder used before?" she asked. "Didn't know angels indulged in cosmetics," Henderson replied. "But then there's a lot I don't know about angels. From now on, I shall make them a special study of mine. There's so much I want to find out. So you'll probably find me following you around with a notebook all evening." "Notebooks for a vampire?" "Oh, but I'm a very intelligent vampire. Not one of those backwoods Transylvanian types. You'll find me charming, I'm sure." "Yes, you look like the shore type," the girl mocked. "But an angel and a vampire, that's a queer combination." "We can reform one another," Henderson pointed out. "Besides, I have a suspicion that there's a bit of the devil in you. That dark cloak over your angel costume, dark angel, you know. Instead of heaven, you might hail from my hometown." Henderson was flippant, but underneath his banter, cyclonic thoughts whirled. He recalled discussions in the past, cynical observations he had made and believed. Once, Henderson had declared that there was no such thing as love at first sight, save in books or plays, where such a dramatic device served to speed up action. He asserted that people learned about romance from books and plays and accordingly adopted a belief in love at first sight, when all one could possibly feel was desire. And now this Sheila, this blonde angel, had to come along and drive out all thoughts of morbidity, all thoughts of drunkenness and foolish gazings into mirrors from his mind, had to send him madly plunging into dreams of red lips, ethereal blue eyes, and slim white arms. Something of his feelings had swept into his eyes, and as the girl gazed up at him, she felt the truth. "Well," she breathed, "I hope the inspection pleases." A miracle of understatement, that. But there was something I wanted to find out particularly about divinity. Do angels dance? Tactful vampire. The next room. Merrymakers were in full swing. Liquor had already pitched gaiety at its height. But there was no dancing any longer. Boisterous little group couples laughed arm in arm about the room. The usual party gangsters were performing their antics in corners. The superficial atmosphere, which Henderson detested, was fully in evidence. It was reaction which made Henderson draw himself up to full height and sweep the cloak about his shoulders. Reaction brought the scowl to his pale face, caused him to stalk along in brooding silence. Sheila seemed to regard this as a great joke. "Pull a vampire act on them," she giggled, clutching his arm. Henderson accordingly scowled at the couples, sneered horrendously at the women, and his progress was marked by the turning of heads, the abrupt cessation of chatter. He walked through the long room like Red Death incarnate. Whispers trailed in his wake. Who is that man? We came up with him in the elevator, and he, his eyes, vampire.
Hello, Dracula.
It was Marcus Lindstrom, and a sullen-looking brunette in Cleopatra costume who lurched toward Henderson. Host Lindstrom could scarcely stand, and his companion in cups was equally at a loss. Henderson liked the man when sober at the club, but his behavior at parties had always irritated him. Lindstrom was particularly objectionable in his present condition. It made him boorish.
My dear, I want you to meet a very dear friend of mine.
Yes, sir.
It being Halloween and all, I invited Count Dracula here, together with his daughter. Asked his grandmother, but she's busy tonight at a Black Sabbath, along with Aunt Jemima. Ha! Count, meet my little playmate.
The woman leered up at Henderson.
Ooh, Dracula, what big eyes you have. Ooh, what big teeth you have. Ooh.
Really, Marcus?
Henderson protested, but the host had turned and shouted to the room.
Folks, meet the real goods, only genuine living vampire in captivity. Dracula Henderson, only existing vampire with false teeth.
In any other circumstance, Henderson would have given Lindstrom a quick, efficient punch on the jaw. But Sheila was at his side. It was a public gathering. Better to humor the man's clumsy jest. Why not be a vampire? Smiling quickly at the girl, Henderson drew himself erect, faced the crowd, and frowned. His hands brushed the cloak. Funny, it still felt cold. Looking down, he noticed for the first time that it was a little dirty at the edges, muddy or dusty. But the cold silk slid through his fingers as he drew it across his breast with one long hand. The feeling seemed to inspire him. He opened his eyes wide and let them blaze. His mouth opened. A sense of dramatic power filled him. And he looked at Marcus Lindstrom's soft, fat neck, with the veins standing in the whiteness. He looked at the neck, saw the crowd watching him, and then the impulse seized him. He turned, eyes on that creasy neck. That wobbling, creasy neck of the fat man. Hands darted out. Lindstrom squeaked like a frightened rat. He was a plump, sleek white rat, bursting with blood. Vampires liked blood. Blood from the rat. From the neck of the rat, from the vein in the neck of the squeaking rat.
Warm blood.
The deep voice was Henderson's own. The hands were Henderson's own. The hands that went around Lindstrom's neck as he spoke. The hands that felt the warmth that searched out the vein. Henderson's face was bending from the neck, and as Lindstrom struggled, his grip tightened. Lindstrom's face was turning purple. Blood was rushing to his head. That was good.
Blood!
Henderson's mouth opened. He felt the air on his teeth. He bent down toward that fat neck and then,
stop. That's plenty.
The voice, the cooling voice of Sheila, her fingers on his arm. Henderson looked up, startled. He released Lindstrom, who sagged with open mouth. The crowd was staring, and their mouths were all shaped in the instinctive O of amazement. Sheila whispered,
"Bravo!
Served him right, but you frightened him." Henderson struggled a moment to collect himself, then he smiled and turned.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he said, "I have just given a slight demonstration to prove to you that our host said of me was entirely correct. I am a vampire. Now,
been given fair warning. I'm sure you will be in no further danger. If there is a doctor in the house, I can, perhaps, arrange for a blood transfusion. The oaths relaxed, and laughter came from startled throats. Hysterical laughter, in part, then genuine. Henderson had carried it off. Marcus Lindstrom alone still stared with eyes that held utter fear.
He knew.
And then the moment broke. For one of the gangsters ran into the room from the elevator. He had gone downstairs and borrowed the apron and cap of a newsboy. Now he raced through the crowd with a bundle of papers under his arm. Extra, extra, read all about it. Big Halloween horror, extra. Laughing guests purchased papers. A woman approached Sheila, and Henderson watched the girl walk away in a daze.
See you later, she called,
and her glance sent fire through his veins. Still, he could not forget the terrible feeling that came over him when he had seized Lindstrom. Why? Automatically, he accepted a paper from the shouting pseudo-newsboy. Big Halloween horror, he had shouted. What was that? Blurred eyes searched the paper. Then Henderson reeled back that headline. It was an extra, after all. Henderson scanned the columns with mounting dread. Fire and costumers. Shortly after 8 p.m., firemen were summoned to the shop of Flames Beyond Control, completely demolished. Damage estimated at, peculiarly enough, name of proprietor unknown. Skeleton found in. No, gasped Henderson aloud. He read, reread that closely. The skeleton had been found in a box of earth in the cellar beneath the shop. The box was a coffin. There had been two other boxes empty. The skeleton had been wrapped in a cloak, undamaged by the flames. And in the hastily pinned box at the bottom of the column were eyewitness comments written up under scareheads of heavy black type. Neighbors had feared the place. Hungarian neighborhood, hints of vampirism, of strangers who entered the shop. One man spoke of a cult believed to have held meetings in the place. Superstition about things sold there. Love filters, outlandish charms, and weird disguises. Weird disguises. Vampires? Cloaks? His eyes!
This is an authentic cloak. I will not be using this much longer. Keep it.
Memories of these words screamed through Henderson's brain. He plunged out of the room and rushed to the panel mirror. A moment, then he flung one arm before his face to shield his eyes from the image that was not there, the missing reflection.
Vampires have no reflections.
No wonder he looked strange. No wonder arms and necks invited him. He had wanted Lindstrom.
Good God!
The cloak had done that. The dark cloak with the stains. The stains of earth, grave earth. The wearing of the cloak, the cold cloak, had given him the feelings of a true vampire. It was a garment, accursed, a thing that had lain on the body of one undead. The rusty stain along one sleeve was blood. Blood! It would be nice to see blood, to taste its warmth, its red light flowing. No, that was insane. He was drunk, crazy.
Ah, my pale friend,
the vampire. It was Sheila again. And above all horror rose the beating of Henderson's heart as he looked at her shining eyes, her warm mouth shaped in red invitation. Henderson felt a wave of warmth. He looked at her white throat rising above her dark, shimmering cloak, and another kind of warmth rose. Love? Desire? And a hunger. She must have seen it in his eyes, but she did not flinch. Instead, her own gaze burned in return. Sheila loved him too. With an impulsive gesture, Henderson ripped the cloak from from about his throat. The icy weight lifted. He was free. Somehow he hadn't wanted to take the cloak off, but he had to. It was a cursed thing, and in another minute, he might have taken the girl in his arms, taken her for a kiss, and remained too, but he dared not think of that.
"Tired of masquerading?" she asked.
With a similar gesture, she too removed her cloak and stood, revealed in the glory of her angel robe. The blonde, statuesque perfection forced a gasp to Henderson's throat.
"Angel,"
he whispered.
"Devil,"
she mocked. And suddenly they were embracing. Henderson had taken her cloak in his arm with his own. They stood with lips seeking rapture until Lindstrom and a group moved noisily into their anteroom. At the sight of Henderson, the fat host recoiled.
"You,"
he whispered.
"You are."
"Just leaving," Henderson smiled, grasping the girl's arm. He drew her toward the empty elevator, the door shut on Lindstrom's pale,
fear-filled face.
"Where are we leaving?"
Sheila whispered, snuggling against his shoulder.
"We were, but not for Earth.
We do not go down into my realm, but up into yours."
"The garden roof?"
"Exactly, my angelic one. I want to talk to you against the background of your own heavens, kiss you amidst the clouds," and her lips found his as the car rose.
"Angel and devil, what a match!"
"I thought so too," the girl confessed. "Will our children have halos or horns?"
"Both, I'm sure."
They stepped out onto the deserted rooftop, and once again, it was Halloween. Henderson felt it. Downstairs, it was Lindstrom and his society friends in a drunken costume party. Here, it was night, silence, gloom. No light, no music, no drinking, no chatter, which made one party identical with another. One night, like all the rest. This night was individual here. The sky was not blue, but black. Clouds hung like the gray beards of hovering giants, peering at the round orange globe of the moon. A cold wind blew from the sea and filled the air with tiny murmurings from afar.
This was the sky that witches flew through to their Sabbath. This was the moon of wizardry, the sable silence of black prayers and whispered invocations. The clouds hid monstrous presences, shambling in summons from afar. It was Halloween.
It was also quite cold.
"Give me my cloak,"
Sheila whispered. Automatically, Henderson extended the garment, and the girl's body swirled under the dark splendor of the cloth. Her eyes burned up at Henderson with a call he could not resist. He kissed her, trembling.
"You're cold," the girl said. "Put on your cloak."
"Yes, Henderson," he thought to himself. "Put on your cloak while you stare at her throat. Then, the next time you kiss her, you will want her throat, and she will give it in love, and you will take it in hunger."
"Put it on, darling. I insist,"
the girl whispered. Her eyes were impatient, burning with an eagerness to match his own. Henderson trembled. "Put on the cloak of darkness, the cloak of the grave, the cloak of death, the cloak of the vampire, the evil cloak filled with a cold life of its own that transformed his face, transformed his mind, made his soul instinct with awful hunger."
"Here."
The girl's slim arms were about him, pushing the cloak onto his shoulders. Her fingers brushed his neck caressingly as she linked the cloak about his throat. Henderson shivered. Then he felt it through him, that icy coldness turning to a more dreadful heat. He felt himself expand, felt the sneer cross his face. This was power. And the girl before him her eyes taunting, inviting. He saw her ivory neck, her warm, slim neck waiting. It was waiting for him, for his lips,
for his teeth.
No, it couldn't be. He loved her. His love must conquer this madness. Yes, wear the cloak, defy its power, and take her in his arms as a man,
not as a fiend.
He must. It was the test.
Sheila.
Funny how his voice deepened.
Yes, dear.
Sheila, I must tell you this. Her eyes so alluring.
It would be easy.
Sheila, please. You read the paper tonight? Yes. I got my cloak there. I can't explain it. You saw how I took Lindstrom. I wanted to go through with it. Do you understand me? I meant to bite him. Wearing this damnable thing makes me feel like one of those creatures. Why didn't her stare change? Why didn't she recoil in horror?
Such trusting innocence!
Didn't she understand? Why didn't she run? Any moment now, he might lose control, seize her. I love you, Sheila. Believe that, I love you.
I know.
Her eyes gleamed in the moonlight. I want to test it. I want to kiss you wearing this cloak. I want to feel that my love is stronger than this thing. If I weaken, promise me you'll break away and run quickly. But don't misunderstand. I must face this feeling and fight it. I want my love for you to be that pure, that secure. Are you afraid? No. Still, she stared at him, just as he stared at her throat. If she knew what was in his mind. You don't think I'm crazy. I went to this costumer's. He was a horrible little old man, and he gave me the cloak. Actually told me it was a real vampire's. I thought he was joking, but tonight I didn't see myself in the mirror, and I wanted Lindstrom's neck, and I want you. But I must test it. You're not crazy, I know. I'm not afraid. Then, the girl's face mocked. Henderson summoned his strength. He bent forward, his impulses battling. For a moment, he stood there under the ghastly orange moon, and his face was twisted in struggle. And the girl lured. Her odd, incredibly red lips parted in a silvery, chuckly laugh as her white arms rose from the black cloak she wore to circle his neck gently. I know. I knew when I looked in the mirror. I knew you had a cloak like mine. Got yours where I got mine. Queerly, her lips seemed to elude his as he stood frozen for an instant of shock. Then he felt the icy hardness of her sharp little teeth on his throat. A strangely soothing sting and an engulfing blackness rising over him.
Thank you for listening.
Have a great night.